we will go ahead and come back to order. The next item on our agenda is an information report discussion of board adopted norms. Okay, so I am not quite sure who should start this discussion. I guess since the agenda item says it was requested by me, I should. It came to our attention about a month ago now, and unfortunately there was not a board meeting between now and then, that there was a breach of several of the board adopted norms that this board approved several months ago. We spent a lot of time discussing what the norms would be, what the expectations were, and so it came as a bit of a surprise to have them breached. And so this discussion item is for the board to address what occurred and what action the board may want to take going forward. So at this point, I will go ahead and see, is there any other board member who would like to say something regarding this item, or how would you like to proceed? Mr. Menares, do you have any comments?
No.
Ms. Miranda Jimenez? Ms. Polis?
We want to make sure that we empower the superintendent to be able to do his job. We want him to be allowed to do that. We don't want his hands tied in any way. So I'm not sure how to have this conversation move forward to make sure that that happens. I don't know if we need additional training or and I do we let the public know what our norms are? How have our norms been published? They were published in our board packets, but are they aware of what the norms are and what we're concerned about?
They were voted on and approved in an official manner, and I will share with you that I can't speak to the public, but I can tell you that the administrators in our district are very, very, very aware of your norms.
Okay. And that we were, at least I, as one board member, was hoping that the administrators were clear as well as, I mean, as well as all the lay people, of what the protocols are. So if there's an issue in a classroom, that the teachers know that they go to their principal, and then the principal, and it just moves right on up, as well as the board members always know who they go to is the superintendent. It makes it difficult without pointing fingers how to move forward with this, so I'm not sure exactly where to go. So that everybody we're all on the same page as we move forward.
Okay, Mr. Flowers?
I'd just like to say that the board and the superintendent, we just need to support each other. And that's what the partnership strengthens, when we all come together as one. And some things have happened, but I say this. You never hear nothing bad said about West Covina Unified School District or this board. So going forward, I think, you know, we make mistakes. Some people make mistakes, and we all do. And I just hope that we can, you know, we learn the lesson. We all learn a lesson from what has occurred, and that, you know, I think we all would do better in the future. And we support our superintendent 110%. And so saying that, again, we don't know where to go, but I think we learned a lesson tonight as we in our discussion. So going forward, I think it will be a great value lesson that we all learn. Whether we need board norms again or not, we can talk about that. The board superintendent, our relationships, I think, is beyond norms, beyond what we all can think, you know. So we support him. So I just say whatever the, what is the president, what do you, what are your suggestions that we do from here forth, going forth?
Well, I have something that was written, and regarding this situation, it doesn't name the specific board member, but and I apologize because it's, I only have it on my phone because unfortunately I've been out of town. Hold on a second.
Would you like someone else to read it?
We can take a break.
Okay. In my role as board president, I have become aware of a recent incident where a member of the governing board took actions, in my opinion, that were inappropriate and which may have caused a misunderstanding with district employees. I want to take the time here to address the issue so that everyone understands the role of board members in this district. First, board members play an important role in the development of policies and priorities for the district. Board members, as a collective, discuss and decide significant big-picture questions that broadly affect employees, students, and the community. Once the board has mapped out a direction for the district, the superintendent and district employees carry out the board's directives. The superintendent, managers, teachers, and others are the educational professionals, and they are the people who run the school district. While the board as a body is the ultimate local authority over the district, each board member has no individual authority to speak or take action for the district beyond what is authorized by board policy or board action. We don't need to address that. As board members, we have a duty to know our school's operations and to observe and address matters that need further attention. While I commend the board members' interest in schools operations, it's important to remind the member and all other members that we recently adopted norms of conduct for board members. These norms were developed with the assistance of a consultant, and they reflect the board's commitment to respecting the obligations and limitations of board authority. The norms include the following three principles. As individuals, board members must understand the distinctions between board and staff roles and do not perform management functions that are the responsibility of the superintendent and his/her staff. As individuals, we must understand that authority rests with the board as a whole and not with individuals. As individuals, we must understand the importance of maintaining the confidentiality of confidential matters. Additionally, the board's Code of Ethics, Board Bylaw 9271, sets for the ideals that should guide each board member's activities. Through the code of ethics, the board expects that each member to remember that the basic functions of the board are to establish the policies by which the district schools are administered and to select the superintendent and staff who will implement those policies. Refrain from performing management functions that are the responsibility of the superintendent and staff. Under our norms and bylaws, interactions that occurred in the previous month are not normal, and I feel that should be brought to the attention of the public that this has occurred, and to our community in general that this board does not expect what occurred to occur, and we respect our community and expect them to let us know when a breach of our board policies has occurred, and that this board as a whole has expressed the concerns with actions that were taken, and that we want our administrators to know that the board supports full disclosure of their interactions with the board members because it promotes the transparency that our public demands, and it also supports unity within the district's governing team. We want our administrators to continue to be helpful to board members, to be reassured that they should disclose their board member interactions without fear or retaliation or retribution, and to know that board members will, as best we can, avoid micromanaging the district or usurping the role of its administrators. As other board members have said, we stand behind our superintendent and his authority to manage the day-to-day operations of the district. And with that, I would say I strongly urge all board members to reflect upon the issues that we have now been made aware of and to commit ourselves to following the board bylaws and norms that we've all agreed to. I invite the members of the board to voice their commitment to these principles and to let me know if they concur with my concerns so that our administrators know exactly where the board stands on this important issue. Any comments?
Well, I definitely concur, and I appreciate you putting that in writing, and I believe it enlightens everybody on the issue in a very eloquent way. So I appreciate you taking that time. And I'm just not sure, do we need additional training, or do we all feel secure that we can move forward and we know our roles at this time?
Mr. Flowers?
Also, very eloquent what you said, Jessica. And turn it over to the superintendent, what would you like to see us do as far as board norms? Would you like to see us come back, or would you like to think that we can go forward from here?
I'll interject here. These are the board policies and norms, and so it really wouldn't be appropriate for Dr. Hinman to advise what the board needs to do.
Well, Madam President, what do you suggest?
I'm clear on our board norms and policies. If there is a board majority that feels additional training is needed, then obviously I would support that, because not a single one of us would want anything that occurred to reoccur or to cause confusion again.
I'd say as a board member who's also an educator, I know the power that sometimes educators feel that board members carry, especially when they visit a school. So I think that, to me, reminds me how important it is that we follow the established norms. So, like you said, that the professionals could do what they do best without ever having any fear of what we may be thinking or what we may want them to do. So I think the norms are pretty explicit, and I myself am pretty clear on what they are, and I don't feel any additional training is necessary.
Ms. Miranda Jimenez?
You raised a really good point, thank you. We don't have an action here, this is just information, but under our board page, are our norms there, or can we add it to our board page? Because it was published in our agenda, but I don't, because
you mean on the district website?
Yeah, on the district website, under the board page.
I'm sure that would not be.
Because you said the community should be aware and know, so I think that's a great idea.
I'm sure that's not an issue.
Okay, I just don't, because it's not an action item, it's an information. Okay, I would say that would be really good, and then the community's well aware, and everyone, so thank you, and absolutely reaffirm those norms.
Okay. Now, we just had a board. Would it be different from what we had before if we go back over board norms again, or would he bring in something different?
No, but if a board, we have a list of norms for the superintendent, for the board, and its interactions with the superintendent and staff. So it would not be changing the board norms, but if clarification is needed to understand what those norms mean, then that's what the additional training would be.
Well, me myself, I'm pretty clear on the norms, so I don't know if anyone else needs any more training on it.
So what I'm hearing is the board reaffirms the norms that we had passed and does not feel further training is needed, and we all concur that we will follow our board norms.
And we'll add it to the website.
and we will add them to the board page on the Board of Education page on the school district website.
Well, you know, one more thing. About speaking on it tonight, and we talked about things in closed session and everything, it opened my mind even more. Brought up some things that we have forgot in the past, so this tonight was very helpful for me, even now.
Okay, then we will go ahead and move on to item 14. Which is an update on suspension and expulsion procedures.
That lady that we put hard to work on.
So thank you, President Shoemaker. It came to light last year during expulsion closed session meeting that it's always good to get a refresher on where we are as a district on the whole discipline process, which includes suspension expulsions. And the reason why it's so important is because the law changes almost monthly in this area. And I think it's important that the board stay abreast of what those changes are and how our district has addressed that and what effect those changes have had on our district as a whole. With two newer board members on the board as well, I think it's a great idea for them to get a refresher as to what our discipline policies are. So with that being said, I will turn this over to Ms. Hawkins.
Thank you, Dr. Hinman. Good evening, Board of Education, Madam President. We've had the opportunity with staff to put together this presentation for you, talking about Assembly Bill 1729 and just taking a look at how those pieces have changed and look at the interventions. Usually when we think of discipline or suspensions, expulsions, we think of consequences. So Dr. Gloria Duncan is going to talk to us tonight about interventions. Just a side note, really glad that she's on the staff. Love having those extra pair of hands, and she's gotten to work quite quickly in the last couple of weeks. So without any further ado, Cheryl's over there nodding too. So we'd like to introduce Dr. Gloria Duncan.
So good evening again, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Hinman, and Cabinet. Tonight I am here to report the changes in the last couple of years as a result of Assembly Bill 1729. I will be discussing the major components of the bill, how West Covina has aligned to it, and provide some examples regarding the bill so we are all on the same page with current discipline procedures. The bill, AB 1729, was created so schools would be more consistent and effective with consequences for students from all demographic groups, especially students with special needs. Utilize more positive, productive interventions before suspending and expelling students, and ultimately improving school discipline and increasing learning. Board policy and administrative procedures were aligned with AB 1729 in May of 2013. An example of the alignment is included in your packet labeled discipline. So if you would want to take that out and refer to it. It includes the site-level discipline strategies that correlate with AB 1729. Each of these strategies were derived from the bill. For example, Strategy 1, Tiered Interventions.
Hold for one moment.
Sure.
Something?
Should have been the loose piece in the packet.
And it's labeled site-level discipline strategies. So if you look at that, you'll see that Strategy 1 is tiered interventions, and Strategy 5 is IEP support programs, are part of a positive behavior support programs in the bill. So you could go through each one of those components, and you could see how they're related to each of our board strategies. And so 2 years ago, these were implemented as a way to provide alternative interventions before moving right away to suspension and expulsion. So what happens when an incident occurs? someone reports it, a student, a teacher, a parent, that incident is investigated by the administrator. The administrator determines which actual violations happen. The administrator also looks at the context of what's happened. Is it this something that's happening? Is it a first offense? Is it the severity of the offense? Then the administrator needs to apply the board policy and the appropriate intervention, and looks at a way to implement or utilize one of these interventions before suspending or expelling a student, as well as holding students involved accountable for their behavior. So this is important to understand the student's story, but also to remember to hold the student and to send a message to students so that this behavior is not repeated. So I have a few examples to share with you. We have a student who is tardy. So in this particular case, it can be easily resolved maybe with a parent conference and working with the student and finding the cause of why the student is tardy. Another incident may be a student has written graffiti on a student desk. This would be a perfect example or opportunity for restorative practice. Student can wash off the desks, maybe wash off some desks in other classrooms. So again, we're looking for creative ways to change behavior than moving straight to suspension or expulsion. Another incident might be a student is possessing a controlled substance. We would look for, again, counseling, providing the appropriate support so the student does not continue in this negative behavior. Something that's more serious is a student selling a controlled substance. That would be something that we are required to suspend the student. But again, we would provide the similar interventions that would ultimately help the student not continue with this type of behavior. So it's very important to remember a couple of things. First thing, the tardy is an incident that you would never suspend the student. And that's part of what the law does. It's very clear what are suspendable offenses. It also includes those that you always suspend. Now for us in West Covina, we've made great progress. We've seen a decrease in the number of suspensions and expulsions, which was the intent of the law. We've seen a special decrease in suspensions at the high school level. So we were making great progress in truly implementing the intent of this particular law. Next steps. We want to continue to do some of the programs that we've instituted in the last couple of years. We want to continue to encourage our schools to use those strategies before moving to suspension. We want to look at positive behavior intervention support programs. We want to look at a tiered approach, a response to intervention. Questions?
Mr. Menares, do you have any questions?
No, I mean, this is good data to see the decline. And more importantly, that kids are in the classrooms rather than taking time off at home. So it's good direction.
Ms. Miranda Jimenez, any questions?
Thank you, Dr. Duncan, and welcome aboard. It's good to have you. And thank you for hitting the ground running. The question that I have, thank you for putting our pupil rights and explain Assembly Bill 1729. The second to the last page, utilize a response to intervention model. With the RTI, what additional support are we giving teachers to keep things from escalating? I understand we're never going to, if somebody's tardy, we will always, if there's selling a controlled substance, But let's say a student is being disruptive, the teacher might suspect they might be sallying, maybe not, but it's disruptive to the classroom. So I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, what then support are we giving the teachers? I know that they can't prove that it's being sold, they haven't seen it, but there's this constant disruption. I just want to make sure that our teachers are feeling very supported as well, because with the decrease of expulsions and the decrease of increases of intervention, sometimes the teachers are in the middle feeling even more overwhelmed. So I'm looking at the teacher lens saying, what are we doing for them?
So in fairness to Dr. Duncan, I will take that question.
Okay, thank you.
Because she's new, because you bring up a very good point. Because of the way the laws change, it is imperative that we consistently inform our teachers of what you can and can no longer do. Most teachers are very traditional. If they suspect that, I want this kid out, I want him suspended, evidence be darned. He's disrupting my class. And, only 5 years ago, you could do that. Now, there's restorative justice, there's investigation, there's process. But the key is, and this is really important, if a teacher does not feel supported by their site administration in the area of student discipline, student learning will not take place.
Right.
And they will not feel supported. So the art, if you will, is not necessarily how you address that particular case, but it's the training of teachers about what are the protocols. We talked a lot about protocols tonight. What are the protocols to follow step by step to meet both the letter of the law and policy? So the answer to your question is a site-based management issue and an assurance that if a teacher doesn't feel supported, we're not doing our job. Because they need to know very clearly what the expectations are, both of classroom management and what we can do to support them at the office level.
Thank you. Thank you, because that is what I'm hearing, not in our district, from teachers in other districts and up and down the state at conferences and stuff, is that teachers are feeling less supported.
This law has made, again, change is hard, and it has made very difficult in some classrooms and some classroom teachers that they don't have the black and white authority to discipline like they used to. Why isn't this kid suspended? Why haven't you expelled him? Why isn't he transferred to another school? Because we can't. The law doesn't allow us to do it. And I think the data shows that maybe through a different model of looking at some of these kids, we can be more effective, help them be successful. I happen to think there's a happy medium between the two.
Okay. Thank you. That was my question.
This is just how we implement. If we have... Let's say a child has an IEP with a behavioral plan or a 504 that addresses the behavioral issues, and now we're doing individual learning plans or SSTs that address particular students' issues. How does the staff, how are they informed that these are goals? So you may have a child that's acting out at the lunch break or at recess, and nobody understands what's set up in place to react to these particular behaviors. So how is the individuals that are in the lunchroom or monitoring the programs outside, how are they informed on what to do with individual cases that have already had a psychosocial or a psychoeducational assessment and needs have been addressed through a behavioral intervention plan?
So it's not uncommon for schools to have a staffing for a student with special needs. And the case carrier, the school psychologist, talk about which strategies would be appropriate for the needs of that particular student. And it really is a meeting where there's open conversation, where the teachers and the support staff at the school work together to help that student change their behavior and be more productive in class. And so that's part of the, and also with an IEP, depending if the student has an IEP involving the parents in that particular, input and working together, again, to try to meet the needs of the student.
So how is the staff informed that these plans are in place? because they're wonderfully written plans, even if it's just a student study team or an individual learning plan, there's wonderful things in place. So how does the substitute teacher know, or the noon aide? How are those people informed to make sure that when a child is acting out, how to interact appropriately?
So, Trustee Polis, if I may address that, and I'll just be honest with you, there are limitations, and you know this, everyone knows this, that wouldn't it be a perfect world if all of the subject area teachers came to the IEP and participated and knew what was in that document? We do not have the ability to enforce that they be there. We had to have one regular ed teacher, or if it's the elementary teacher, that would be a little different. They should know that. So the answer to your question is we just need to get better at communication, because if those subject area teachers don't come to the IEP, it's incumbent upon the school to make sure that they have the information. That falls off. I'll just be honest with you. We need to do a better job. But there is no system in place currently to ensure that all of those stakeholders of that child have that communication. I think it's a flaw in the system. And it's, again, by asking the right questions, I think it will help us get better at it. But there is no current system where all of those stakeholders would be informed to the level at which they should be.
Well, and I know now that we're moving specific programs to certain schools.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you may be seeing the same types of behaviors at schools. Are there in services for all staff on how to deal with certain behaviors, characteristics right. at least, of what they may be seeing at their school sites?
I think the key is, and again, to the principal or the assistant principal or the counselor, let's just say it's a security guard or a noontime supervisor, they don't have the information, and they would treat that child as they would any other child, not knowing the information. But when they get to that office or that point of contact with that service person that I just described, that's where the information has to be relevant. Not only does it have to be relevant for the child and what's written in the IEP, but for our own legality purposes, we need to know what's in that document as well and make sure that we meet the services that were agreed upon in IEP. So you've touched on a piece that is very, very important and potentially very, very litigious, and it would serve us well to do a better job at that communication.
And I'm
going to get back on yours really quickly,
because it's important to understand that not every disciplinary issue reaches the teacher or the principal. So a noon aide could have somebody stand on a line, which could be the exact opposite of, let's say, my nephew's 504 plan, which says you can't do that to him, you make him run.
Right.
And so how it's a little scary to know that he could have stand on the line every day at lunch, which is exactly against anything that's supposed to happen, because the people in charge of that playground don't know.
Correct.
Because mm-hmm. it's not always going to reach the teacher or the principal.
No, but it needs to at some point. Again, I'm admitting that we have some work to do in that area, but if you break it down to that individual child and the individual case, the individual IEP, we do not have the ability to bring all the parts together to have that conversation, so it becomes incumbent upon the school site to make sure that information gets out. And again, this is a great, if nothing else comes from this piece, this is a significant reminder of an area that we need to be cognizant of and continue to address. So I did not think through this discipline presentation that we'd be having this discussion. But because we are, it puts wheels in motion of an area that we'll be able to address and maybe even be able to come back to the board with the report of how we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I do think it's very important sometimes for the noon aides to know. There are some children that you cannot touch. Mm-hmm. When they're having a meltdown, you cannot touch them. So what you see is what you normally, as an adult, a nurturer, you're going to touch somebody. But instead of having the nurturing effect, it triggers a whole discipline where they may strike that individual. And this is somebody without a disability that just has experienced trauma. And there's great plans written. And so if you can get back to us and let us know how the noon aide finds out, because that's going to help support even teachers when they say, we can't believe that this is happening, and that child's allowed, you know, has just struck the noon aid.
Right.
And is allowed back in the classroom when they don't understand the background information.
Right.
And I know there's privacy issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So who needs to know, and how do you decide who needs to know that information? I know they're complicated, but I know that these are issues that parents have approached me on and that I've experienced firsthand.
I mean, it could be something as simple as the noon aides, when they go on duty, get a list of students. If there's a disciplinary issue involving this student, immediately contact so-and-so.
And I'm not sure that doesn't exist, but rather than explore it now, I'd like to get back to you on that.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
And I really appreciate the insight into the new law and speaking about it publicly. So we're all on the same page, because I know some teachers, even in our district, were feeling a little apprehensive about what that meant. So that know that we're all coming from the same, trying to work this out, I think will just empower them even more, knowing that they are supported.
Mr. Flowers?
Yes. Dr. Duncan, welcome. It's always a pleasure seeing you, second time I think seeing you, so you know, it's a pleasure to see that smile. This time next year, I look forward to seeing the data points that you have. Being saying that, because with an SRO on campus, these numbers should definitely decline quite a bit. So that was my point on it. And so I'm just looking forward to thank you for the data that you've given us. But I'm absolutely looking forward to this number declining tremendously next year. And I've got a chance to talk to a SRO, superintendent and I, and he was a former SRO, and he was telling us the communication that he has with these students when he was on campus. So, and how much they respected him, how things had changed since he was on campus relating to the students. So, thank you. Great job.
Thank you for allowing me to make the presentation.
Thank you.
Only question I have is, I noticed in the board policy it says we send a notification each year that the disciplinary policies of the district are available. Is there a way we could provide them other than saying, hey, you can request it yourself, make sure they're on the district website, make sure they're at each school site, or maybe depending on how long it is, it just goes as part of the package for enrollment?
It's my understanding that, and I'm not basing this on West Covina, but it's my understanding that each student has, not only do they have to get it, but they have to acknowledge that they got it. They have to be signed by both the parent and the student. Doesn't mean they actually physically read it, but they're stating that they have.
Right. No, it just says, at the beginning of the school year, the superintendent or designee shall notify parents, guardians in writing about the availability of district rules related to discipline.
I contend that they must physically sign off that they've received those discipline policies.
Well, then I guess my question has already been addressed.
So, it doesn't make, again, but what you're pointing out is that there's a disconnect between what the policy says and what we actually do.
Correct. So I think we go above what the policy says.
So we either change our policy or have an administrative regulation that actually says what we're doing.
We will get back to you on that one as well. See all the wonderful things you brought to us, Dr. Duncan? Thank you for that.
You are so welcome, Dr. Hemman.
It's a code of conduct that we're signing off, that students are signing off on, and I don't know if it's exactly what, there might be additional information that this is referring to that we're offering, because I know that I, as well as my children, we go over it and we have to sign it.
Right.
But it's not a lengthy document. There may be more supportive information that we're offering, according to the board policy.
We will get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is number 18, information report. Mm. Dr. Hinman, who I'm assuming is going to send it over to Mr. Seaman.
Yes, I am, actually. Thank you, President Shoemaker. At this time, I'd like to turn this item over to our Assistant Superintendent of Personnel, Mr. Seaman.
And I would like to report to the board and the superintendent that the district has no complaints filed in relation to the Williams, Valenzuela, or Casey lawsuits.
That's what we like to hear.
Yes, great.
Okay, the last item on our agenda is the resolution approving the issuance and sale of qualified school academy bonds. Do I have a motion? Yes, I took it off consent, but it doesn't mean I want to discuss it.
Well, I would love to hear your discussion.
Yes.
There was no major issues. I mean, I think everybody recalls when we first discussed this that I had a lot of concerns. So basically, at this point, I am going to abstain partially because I have not had the time due to being out of town for personal reasons to really ask the questions I would normally ask and review it as in-depth as I normally would. On a cursory read, I don't see anything that says absolutely don't say yes to it, but, you know, that's just it. I also don't like having our district office as collateral, but that's besides the point.
That's collateral. So. I will move this item.
I will second it.
And I appreciate your concerns, Ms. Shoemaker, and your thoroughness. I express my sympathies for you.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so motion passes 4-0 with one abstention. Okay, is there further Board of Education discussion?
We have a new board member, so if you can go over what happens on the welcome back to on August the 3rd. So,
you know, I haven't even discussed it with the superintendent
well,
let's
hand it over. Where do we need to be? What time? Where do we park?
So thank you. And rather than attempt to stumble through this, because I have not been to a welcome back either, I am going to hand it over to my left arm, which is Ms. Hawkins, who in fact has put the program together, and I would ask her to describe what we need to do on Monday.
So this year, due to some construction, we're going to be holding the welcome back at Edgewood High School. Teachers and guests and people who are coming will arrive somewhere between 7:15 and 7:45, and there will be refreshments. For that, it will be held in the Edgewood High School gymnasium. We will start the presentations and things at about 10 minutes to 8. With any luck, will be done by about 9:15. The Teacher of the Year will speak. Past Teacher of the Year and current Teacher of the Year, the West Covina High JROTC will present the colors, and the Edgewood High ASB president will do the Pledge of Allegiance for us. President Shoemaker will do her president's message. Dr. Hinman will do his superintendent's message. Mr. Beggy, the president of TOC, will speak and introduce. And Mr. Seaman will announce the years of service, and the board will distribute the years of service pins to all of the teachers that are present. The gym is going to be set up. Penny is working on it for the first time since Grace is gone. So it's been a big deal for us. And then the elementary folks will stay at Edgewood High, and Mr. Antonetti is coming to do some training for all 8 of our elementary schools and Coronado High School. And the rest of the schools will go back to their school sites, and they have staff development planned for the day.
Can we stay a little bit?
Sure.
I'd like to see a little bit of Mr. Antonetti.
Yeah. So parking is in the usual area. We'll probably have it coned off for the board and special guests. And then we'll have seating on the stage, just like we always have.
Parking will be at the basketball courts, right? Because that's where we normally park for Edgewood.
We will have areas
yeah,
coned off.
Yeah, we will have it coned off. I can't speak to that it will be right on the basketball courts because I think there's some things set up on some of those. We'll have
that
it.
That driveway.
Okay.
Right.
Okay,
we'll know where
perfect.
To go there.
Okay.
That's as close. You'll say we'll know because you're going to telepathically let us know.
We'll let you know.
When you come up that driveway and you go beyond the gate, you'll be people there to direct you.
Okay.
We're trying to make sure that the traffic flow of people is really good. We will send you a map with where that you're parking. I know with the principal and Eric Calderon and Penny Reyes have been working out all of the logistics of where everybody parks, because of course all of the Edgewood High and middle school staff will be staying on campus, as well as all of the elementary school teachers will be there for the whole day. So we want to make sure wherever you park, you can get in and get out, because there will still be a lot of cars in the parking lot and around the campus for the day. Okay? So make sure you have a map.
And then the asphalt, Mr. An update on the asphalt at Edgewood High School. Okay. Dr. Hanman?
Yes.
Update on the progress with the, I've been asked by some community members about our hills of dirt where there should be asphalt for the tennis courts. I just wanted a quick update.
Sure.
Just so the public could hear if they're listening. Or.
And unfortunately, I cannot give you great news. Mother Nature did not play us any favors this year. They dug up the current asphalt that was there and a minor layer of dirt when the storm hit, I think inches of rain. And unfortunately, below the first level of dirt, I'm repeating what Dave Larkin told me just for the record, there's a clay base, and a clay base retains water. So it would take weeks and weeks and weeks for it to dry out before we could actually lay the asphalt. So there were two choices at this point. Scrape the clay, put it out on the ground level, spread it out to help the drying process, which would take additional 2 weeks to what we already had planned, or go in, remove the clay ground, replace it with non-clay dirt, and then begin the asphalt process. To make a long story short, we're going to be 2 weeks behind what would have been the opening of school.
Okay. Other than that, I've been hearing amazing things from the community with how good our schools look, the fence, the painting. People are so impressed by our mural over at West Covina High, parents telling me how good it looks over there. So kudos to the district. To Dr. Coghlan's department for doing such an excellent job with getting school ready, physically, the physical of the school.
Having a non-clay base,
yes.
Is that going to make a difference?
Well, the only difference is it makes it will allow us to lay asphalt faster.
But
that's the only difference.
It won't
be
more difficult to maintain.
No, once they put it in, they'll pressurize it and it will settle. Yeah.
Any further discussion? Okay, dates to remember. August 3rd, 2015, welcome back at Edgewood High School Gym at 7:30 a.m. August 5th, 2015, first day of school. August 11th, 2015 is the next Board of Education meeting. And there being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of July 28th, 2015 is adjourned at 9:03 p.m.
Yeah.